This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
To talk about the Knicks and their loss today to the Boston Celtics, we bring in Steve Popper from Newsday. Hey, Steve, how are you?
Hey, Lori, how's it going?
I'm doing just fine, thanks. All right, so the Knicks get shellacked by the Cavs, and then today they lose to the Celtics. It's one thing to lose. It's another to sort of be embarrassed and blown out. Let's start with what were some of the post-game reactions? I admit, you know, I'm prepping to come on the show here. I'm watching a number of games or whatever. I watched the Knicks game today. I didn't catch all the post-game. It looked like Jalen Brunson may have had some interesting things to say that I couldn't quite, you know, hear all of that. What was the post-game today?
Well, he did have some interesting things to say. I almost need a therapist or something to understand them and decipher them. It was kind of odd for Jalen because Jalen is a guy, he's a super competitor. Just, you know, every loss, no matter who it's to, he takes it hard. And even wins, you know, he was pointed out after the Cleveland game that sort of some of the troubles that they've been having were masked by wins. You know, they beat Atlanta in overtime. They beat Chicago at home in overtime the night before the Cleveland game. And he kind of felt like they were masking some issues there by coming out with a win. And took those games, you know, he really took the Cleveland loss hard. One of the things that, you know, he kind of pointed out right away when we were talking about the game today was, you know, he said, whatever we did in the first, second, and fourth quarter doesn't really matter. The third quarter show what we can do, how we can play, what we can do, you know, compete against these teams. And that didn't sound like Jalen. Jalen is not a guy who takes moral victories out of losses. Mm-hmm. So I think sort of as, you know, as team captain, I think he was trying to, you know, throw them kind of a life preserver in the locker room, you know, for the guys to believe and for fans to believe. Because right now it's hard to convince anybody that, you know, you look at this team and to convince yourself that they're going to beat, you know, one of these top teams, you know, and get any further than they did before, you know, in the last 2 years. Right now they're lined up and pretty securely in that spot to face Boston in the second round. If you get past, you know, whoever it is, Detroit, Milwaukee, in the first round. And I just don't know how any of us can believe, you know, as much as you see the potential of this team, how you can believe that they can beat Boston in a playoff series. And I think, to me, with the moves they made this offseason, you know, the goal is to get past where you did the last 2 years. And that's a tough ask right now. I just don't see it.
There's the optimist in me and there's the pessimist in me. And the optimist, what if I said to you, well, this is year one with this core, and we look at a team like Cleveland as an example, there is a benefit to continuity and letting a team kind of marinate with each other and learn each other, and that it takes a little time, and that they are a piece or two away, whether that's size, whether that's depth, and that Leon Rose and the front office couldn't get all of that done in one off season. If I said that to you, that this is about a multi-year plan with about a, you know, look at the next 2, 3, 4 years and say somewhere in there, this team will mature and win a championship. Is that a reasonable argument that you could still hold out hope for, or do you just look at the matchups versus the three best teams in the league and see this gap and say that's not reasonable?
That's absolutely fair. And I'd say, look, I'm a big believer in stability and continuity. And you know, these guys are learning each other. You know, it's first year here for Towns, for Bridges. You know, OG really had a very brief run with them last year because of injuries. To me, that's a fair thing, but it's also like I just look at the path, mm-hmm. and it's hard to see where, you know, some of these flaws get better. Mm-hmm. You know, Towns is an amazing offensive talent. Is he ever going to be a defensive center? I think that's been proven. You know, he's not a second, third year guy. You know, this is not Evan Mobley in Cleveland, mm-hmm. who you're watching mature.
Yeah.
He is what, you know, Cat is what he is. And you know, I would argue the Knicks won the trade. You know, it was a good move to make the deal, but you know, you need, you know, right now this team is crying for Mitchell Robinson or Isaiah Hartenstein last year, mm-hmm. A defensive center to put next to him. It's just not the role he's filled, and it's why Minnesota went out and put Rudy Gobert next to him for, mm-hmm. you know, paid a lot to get that. And the Knicks, you know, to me, it's just, you know, are we going to depend on Mitchell Robinson? That's a big gamble to think of with the injury history he's had and a sort of injury for a big man. You know, can it happen? Sure. And, you know, I just had a column in Sunday's paper where I basically said that, you know, you better, you know, what they've proven now is the only chance they have is to be fully healthy. Because if there's anything goes wrong here among those top five and Mitchell Robinson, Deuce McBride, I don't think they've got any chance. They've got a superstar player in Brunson. They've got, you know, a one side of the ball superstar in Cat, and some of the other stuff just hasn't quite worked yet the way you'd hope. You know, and look, I'm as fault as anybody on this. You know, I know I wrote at some point this year that, you know, you could talk about what they paid for Bridges and could they've used those picks for someone else, and that, you know, on paper he's a perfect fit for what this team needed. You know, a defensive wing, you know, a guy who can fill in as, you know, much more adept as that third option instead of, you know, being the first option he was in Brooklyn. But you know, he disappears and there's times where you just almost forget he's on the team, and they can't absorb that right now with the depth they have. They need him to be, you know, a player worth 5 first round picks every night. And you know, you look at this game, don't look at the final numbers. Look at when this was a game.
Yeah. So there's a lot to unpack there. But let's talk about Bridges. And that to me was one of the most disappointing aspects of this game today and of the last couple games, Cleveland and Boston, that I know that Brunson and Karl-Anthony Towns are not good defensive players. We know that. The whole point of this roster is that guys like OG and Bridges, Josh Hart, and was supposed to be Mitchell Robinson, or it's Precious Achiuwa and Deuce McBride. Guys who are plus defenders are supposed to be out there to camouflage some of that. And I thought Bridges was one of the absolute culprits defensively out there, part of drop switches and leaving wide open three-point scores. And I guess the question I have when I see them play as poorly as they did, but to Brunson's point, show up with some effort in just the third quarter and play that way. Is how much of this is about effort? How much of this is about Tibbs and coaching and, you know, some rigidity where if that group or if Bridges is having an off game and Landry Shamet looks better out there or Deuce looks better out there, that maybe Bridges needs to be on the bench?
Yeah, you know, look, you know, Tibbs in the third quarter, 2:59 to the game, Bridges went out for McBride, and McBride wasn't scoring, but the team was rolling with him out there, mm-hmm. sort of that defense and a perimeter threat. And Tibbs rode it till I think about 10 minutes left in the game. Kind of rode it through pretty well. And I don't think it's the coaching. I know Tibbs gets a lot of criticism, and people talk about, you know, what the defenses look like. He's a real good defensive coach. Look, he's been that for his whole career. Sometimes you make do with what you have. Is there a way to do it better, you know, to get more out of these guys? I don't know. I just think, you know, they're set in what they are. Again, the Cleveland game, you know, you didn't have Josh Hart. OG Anunoby was just coming back and clearly looked rusty after 3 weeks off. I guess the believer in me is still, let's see this team, you know, in round one of the playoffs after having the full 82 together, and you hope that they're healthy and they're moving, you know, kind of flowing at that point. But I just haven't seen anything. Like, I wouldn't rule them out against the Cleveland, but I just, to get past Boston, I just don't think. There's something missing that was there last year, sort of that toughness. You never thought last year's team or the Knicks from 2 years ago were giving you less than 100%. And the Cleveland game the other day, you know, there was some talk about letting go of the rope in that game. That was not a Thibodeau. That was not a Knicks team. Mm-hmm. And it's just odd to see those kind of nights. You know, hey, look, every team has nights that they want to erase from the schedule. But it's kind of odd when you see that and when you see the team getting beat down the court consistently. It's just not a sign of anything Thibodeau has ever done before. When you see today sort of the wide-open three-point shooters, yep. and miscommunications in, you know, whatever we are, game 50, I don't even know the number, 58, 59. It's just odd to see those things. And I have a hard time blaming Thibodeau because this is a guy who lived his entire career with these attention to detail. Jalen Brunson said it the other day, that, you know, that the coaches, you know, kind of gave them the plan of what to look for, what was going to happen in transition defense. And Jalen said, you know, there wasn't an attention to detail by the players. And you see it again, like I said, today, you know, even though they made a run in the third quarter, you know, there were times with clear miscommunications on defense where guys didn't know what they were doing on switches and mm-hmm. Leaving wide open shooters. I still feel like you got to pin that a little on the players. You know, they don't practice a lot. They haven't been playing together as a group. There's been some guys missing. Can they get it together by the postseason? Remains to be seen. I just don't see how it happens. And I know you mentioned earlier about, you know, give this team, you know, 2-3 year window. Absolutely do that. But look, Boston is still going to have Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown for a couple of years. And, mm-hmm. You know, Oklahoma City is just coming into their own as a complete powerhouse for the league, and has the ability to make a lot of moves and get, you know, draft picks, you know, low cost players to the roster. That's one of the issues. Look, you know, I ran into a league source the other day who said after the Cleveland game that just incredulous that the Knicks didn't add a big at the trade deadline. And it's understandable when you look at their salary cap situation. They have, you know, they have no wiggle room without getting to that second apron that they're desperately trying to avoid. So, you know, it was hard to make a deal, and they just wind up having to. Hope against hope that Mitchell Robinson can not only stay healthy, but be the player he was before two surgeries. You know, it's, mm-hmm. you're hoping for the best, but realistically, you're shaking your head and wondering, you know, where is this hope coming from?
Talk to Steve Popper about the Knicks, and what was the latest after the game about Karl Anthony Towns and that knee? We saw him, you know, go up, come down, and hobble off the court in pain, clutching that knee, go to the locker room, come back out a few minutes later, and I was shocked that Tibbs would put a hobbling cat back into the game. And at one point they were down by 18 points with I think about 4.5 minutes left in the game, and there's Karl Towns out there limping on the court.
Yeah.
And so, for, you know, if we want to say, look, Tom Thibodeau has established a level of competence for this Knicks team that was largely missing for about 20 years. And certainly the man can coach, and he's a fantastic basketball coach. But there are times like that that I also scratch my head and wonder if, for somebody who is as smart and accomplished a coach as he is, where's the common sense?
Yeah, I'd agree. And look, you know, I kind of fight the fight against the minutes police a lot of times that, you know, the people who criticize the guy, you know, guys for playing 35, 36, 37 minutes in the game, I just never see the difference. And there's no science that tells you that playing 32 minutes versus playing 36 makes a difference. And Thibodeau has really changed, you know, the style that we grew up on in the 90s and the early 2000s. Mm-hmm. They don't practice hard. They do a lot of walkthroughs, a lot of film work. It's a lot of ballroom gatherings of, you know, going over game plans. So they've really taken, you know, the foot off the pedal in the practice time. There's no Pat Riley 3 hours, you know, just running these guys to exhaustion. So that's where they make up the minutes.
Legacies shape who we are, but who's shaping them? In the new season of Black History Year, we're breaking down the meaning and power behind the personal, familial, and systemic legacies that define our world. We're diving deep into how political and cultural forces have historically molded Black communities and what it means for our future. Join us on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts for a new season of Black History Year. Let's shape our collective memory and legacy together.
But I'd agree with the one thing is, and it's just been a habit that has kind of had us all shaking our heads, and we ask, is situations like this where 4:28 left, Karl Anthony Towns is clearly still hobbled, and he comes in a game down 18 points. And once you see that you're not going to, you know, make it up, whatever, if you put him in and he wanted to go in, take him out with 2 minutes left, it just makes no sense to me. To run him to the buzzer, to run any of the guys to the buzzer when the game's out of reach.
Yep.
In his defense, Towns said he was good to go. He said his quote was, "I want to play. My teammates are out there fighting. I'm going to go out there and fight with them."
Yeah, we both know that a player will always tell you they want to play. That's not the player's job to determine that. It's one thing if we were talking about a playoff game and the, you know, first quarter. We're talking about a regular season game where they're, to your point, they're down 18 points with 4.5 minutes left to play, and he's limping. What are we doing?
There's the season.
Why would you do that? So, I guess.
Yeah, and look, Kat said to us after, he's like, "Well, I'll see you over the next couple of games." So I don't think we have any assurances that he's in the lineup on Wednesday, you know, against Philadelphia.
Right. And so last question before I let you go is that, and maybe this is a question for the offseason, but I see stuff like that, and I absolutely agree with you that, look, this, I am sure Tom Thibodeau, no coach in the league works harder than he does. He always tries to prepare his teams, but if they are the players out there and confused and somehow something didn't sink in, or he's playing Karl Anthony Towns limping with 4.5 minutes left down by 18, I just wonder if could Tom Thibodeau end up being, I asked the question earlier on my show, is he Buck Showalter? Is he the guy who is fantastic, incredible, attention to detail, restores competence, teaches everybody how to, you know, go from being that, you know, don't have the fundamentals to having it right, lays this foundation. But I look at the Cavaliers and Bickerstaff, really good coach. He left. They have Kenny Atkinson now, and they seem to be hitting another gear. Warriors, Mark Jackson lays a foundation. Steve Kerr comes in. Is Tom Thibodeau on some level, is he, should there be the guy who comes next?
I'm not going to buy it. I just don't, you know, I've known Tom long enough, and the work he puts in preparing this team. Some of it I attribute to, you know, what you mentioned very early on here, that they're a first-year team together, mm-hmm. and it takes time.
Yep.
Do I wish in my head, look, we're not behind closed doors. Do I wish sometimes he'd hold guys accountable? You know, look, I'm old enough, I covered Jeff Van Gundy, Pat Riley here. Mm-hmm. And I've been there on nights where Jeff saw an effort like in Cleveland the other night and yanked all five starters at one time. Do I wish I'd see that from Tom? I do. But, you know, we've talked, including we talked today about this, the difference between today's players with mm-hmm. social media and their presence and what guys coached in the 90s or, you know, whatever, 20 years ago. It's a hard road to walk for a coach, and I think he's navigated pretty well. I will say this. He's sort of like when we mentioned Jeff Van Gundy, he was tied into Patrick Ewing as his best, hardest working player.
Mm-hmm.
Tom Thibodeau has Jalen Brunson, who believes in him.
Yep.
And who is on board and is as hard a working star as you want. So to me, I think Jalen is happy with him. I think Tom is happy with Jalen. I think that's sort of where you start the building blocks. I think at some point you can't put it on the coach, and you've got to put it on the players to say, and look, as captain, you put it on Jalen too. Somebody's got to recognize and say when guys aren't busting it down court, you know, when guys aren't, you know, I mean, look, Josh Hart shouldn't be the tangible difference in winning and losing to your team.
Mm-hmm.
But when you saw the Cleveland game the other day and you saw guys who were getting beat every time down the court, just getting outrun, getting out hustled, it shouldn't be that evident. And what Josh Hart gives you, everyone should be able to give you. And it's a shame that it doesn't, but it's the reality of the league. And to me, it can't be the reality of the team. For this team to be what they want to be, they've got to all play as hard as Jalen does, as hard as Josh Hart does. And if they could get that together, I think they could be a very good team. They haven't shown that yet.
All right. Steve Popper from Newsday covering the Knicks and... Well, they get Mitchell Robinson back, and Steve, I guess I'll close with where I started, which is if you want to be optimistic about it and say, what's the piece that's missing, you have to hope for health, but Mitchell Robinson does look like he's lost weight. He looks very much in, you know, kind of cardio physical shape. We'll see. And, you know, is that the missing piece, the rim protector, the defender, the guy who gives them size and a big lineup to play against the Bostons and the Clevelands? We'll find out.
And look, the one thing from him you don't need is, you know, some of the rust and, you know, skill stuff. You don't need the skill stuff for Mitchell Robinson. You need timing, you know, but you need defensive timing. You need rebounding. You need toughness. And those are things he can give if he's healthy.
Yep.
So that's probably your best hope.
All right. We'll find out. From what I gather, what is it, later this week, this coming week, we should see Mitchell Robinson on the court in a game?
Well, I mean, we hope. Look, the Knicks are in a world of secretive teams. The Knicks are on a whole different level.
Mm-hmm.
So we ask, we talk, we check. We check with Mitchell. We check with the team. And there is no clear answer. He's back practicing. It sounds like it's going to be, you know, could be Philadelphia, could be Memphis this week. I'd say this, they've been cautious and careful and patient all along, but they sure need him.
Yeah, I would check and see Philly obviously is in a crazy situation of their own. I would make sure that Embiid is not playing, because even though he's been bad, I wouldn't want one of those Embiid, you know, trips, falls, kicks him, and
I'm gonna take the under on Mitchell on Joel Embiid playing Wednesday anyway. So
yeah, that's true.
I think we should be good there.
He may be done for the season. Who knows?
Right.
Anyway, all right, Steve Popper, great stuff. Appreciate the time. We'll catch up with you soon.
Anytime. Talk to you soon.